Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown.
You gotta be kidding me.
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Over here reading the breaking news with the full crew this evening. We got QB1, JR, what's going on?
What's going on, fellas?
Miles Gorham. I don't know what it is that I can do. I don't know. Maybe I can mix in some music or something for your intro since letting you go first and having all the limelight last pod wasn't enough. So I don't know. You let me know. What is it that you need to feel like you are getting the appropriate amount of respect on your name?
That wasn't even me. I'm just playing around. No, I'm good. I'm good. Just trying to ignore my... Teddy's trying to get out the kennel right now. You know, he's trying to get loose. So you can hear him in the background.
Oh, yep. Well, maybe we'll ask Gabs what it is we need to do for the next one to make sure that...
Gabs should know.
That you have the appropriate amount of respect on your name.
Right.
Saxy Prince. Out here in the Uber, driving around town, picking folks up. What's going on with you, man?
Saxy Prince, you know, tonight he's the mobile prince, you know? Just heading back home after quite a long day of musical lessons. And, man, it's been a long night, but let's get this going.
All right. Well, what you got queued up for us today? What's the other random question?
What do I have queued up for you guys? I guess I would want to know. Have I asked you guys a musical question just yet?
I mean, I'm sure at some point.
I haven't asked you guys if you guys want to which instrument you would play yet. Have I?
I do not believe you have.
All right, that's the random question of the day. It's random, y'all. So, you know, sometimes I'm coming up with them on the spot. But, you know, y'all know I play saxophone. I almost played flute, but I changed my mind the last second. I play saxophone.
Visual of JR right now when you said you used to play the flute.
Yeah, like, man.
JR, turn your camera on,
man. See, the funny thing is, if me and JR were on the same football team together, we would be best friends, but I could not imagine how many times JR would just shake his head at me every damn day.
You eat ice cream off the cone, and now you wanted to play the flute.
Hey, man, I was in middle school, so a lot of desires that we had in middle school that, you know, just didn't come to fruition. But anyways,
I'm just shaking my head like that Kanye gift.
You're right. the instrument I'd probably play if I didn't play saxophone, guitar, and piano, I'd probably pick the drums. Be rhythmically gifted. What about y'all?
All right, QB1, we'll start with you.
Definitely the snare drum for me. I've always been like fascinated by the movie
Drumline. Yeah. I knew it was coming.
Want to get on his Nick Cannon.
Yeah, I've always been interested in the snare drum, so that would be the instrument that I play.
All right, Miles, what about you, man?
Probably two different. I wanted to play the saxophone. I was the nice kid in music in a band class in the middle school who chose to not go down that path because everybody was trying to do it. And I decided to go play the, what was it? What did I play? The trombone, which, terrible idea. So I quit.
Hey, Miles, if you want lessons, I can give them to you, man.
I'm cool.
That's all.
I'm cool. That was like 15 years ago. Long time ago. But probably now, I probably want to play the piano, I think.
Okay.
Can teach you that, too.
Alicia Keys on.
Oh, boy. See? Y'all just keep messing with JR over here, man. I think you guys basically took mine because when I was younger, I was in piano lessons and I didn't ever want to do it. But, you know, as I've grown older, I've realized that I probably should have stuck with it, especially given that really all music production today is someone with a MIDI keyboard. So I'd be able to do a lot of that stuff if I'd actually stuck with and gone with the lessons. And then the drums was the other thing, just because, and actually the full drum kit, not just the snare, because in all the bands back in the day, the drummer was always the, I guess the most badass one, the one that was pulling down the most ladies. So that was always going to be the one that that I had the most interest in. So there we go. We've got Saxy Prince's random question of the day. And while I was talking and stalling, we lost Saxy Prince, but got him back. And now we have QB1 back as well. So we'll get on into this stuff we need to talk about today. And this was the weekend. It finally happened. Mayweather, McGregor. We're going to go through these takes real quick because I don't want to spend any more time than we need to talking about this. But JR, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on the fight? Did it go how you thought it was going to go? And then kind of follow up, what were your thoughts on how folks reacted to what seemed to be what everyone expected to happen on Twitter afterwards?
Well, the fight did not go how I expected it to. I thought Mayweather would come out and, you know, straight dominate him, which he did towards the latter half of the fight. But his interview after the fight was really interesting to me because him and his father just showed how masterminds they are of the sport, because he broke down his entire game plan. So basically he said in the octagon they have 5 rounds, and I'm not sure how long they last or whatever because I'm not a big, you know, UFC fan, but he was basically saying after 25 minutes he knew Conor McGregor would be done, and that's how he approached this fight. So his whole game plan of this boxing match was to attack him after those first 25 minutes, and that's what he did during the latter half of the fight. So it was really good to see him, you know, not just go out there and just box. And that's why I'm such a big fan of Floyd Mayweather. He doesn't just go out there and go through the motions and just box. He has a game plan, and he attacks every single person differently that he faces. But, you know, I was happy to see him win and go out on top, 50-0. As far as the reactions afterwards, it was kind of funny just seeing the people backpedaling afterwards that was going for McGregor. He got completely dominated in the latter half of the fight. And, you know, like Floyd always says, he wants to give the people what they want to see. And that's exactly what he did. He was saying before the fight that he was going to knock him out. He didn't say when, but his prediction came true. And I'm just happy that he went out on top 50-0, one of the greatest boxers we've ever seen and one of the best athletes we've ever seen, in my opinion.
So, Miles, what about you? What are your thoughts? How do you think it went? And what were your thoughts on kind of the real-time reaction on this event that was going on Twitter and everywhere else?
To be honest, didn't watch it, didn't follow it. Woke up in the morning. Especially once I found out that it was getting delayed, I was like, I'm not staying up late to watch that. I knew it was going to go into the late hours. So I didn't really hear too much about it. I watched kind of like the highlights of it in the morning. I thought it was kind of what I expected. I think some people are, you know, flipping it now, saying like, "Oh, get him in the octagon, see how he do there." But in all honesty, I think it'd be a lot harder of a transition to go from boxing to MMA than it is from MMA to boxing. That's my personal opinion. Someone could, you know, fact check me real quick and tell me otherwise. But I just think based off the kicking and the the like wrestling aspect of it, of MMA, is a lot more complex because there's also boxing involved in that too. So I didn't really think too much of it. I expected Mayweather to win, and he did. So maybe it wasn't the exact way it lasted a little longer than expected, but yeah, he won. So.
And Saxy Prince, you actually went out into the public to watch this. How'd that go for you? And what were your thoughts on how it all went?
Yeah. My job actually put on the fight, and I went there later actually because I knew that at what time it was gonna roughly start to happen, so I didn't have to watch all the fights beforehand, build up and stuff. But it was so funny to watch how excited the public was about this fight. I mean, a lot of people who've never really watched boxing. I remember when I got there, this one lady, she kind of turned to me, she's like, "Hey, who are you? Who you rooting for?" And, you know, I didn't really have a stake, but I'm just like, you know, I'm probably a Mayweather fan. And she's just like, "Oh, damn, I'm going to find someone else who's a McGregor fan." I was like, okay, well, you go do that. But I brought someone who had never seen boxing before. I'm just like, hey, this is how the fight is going to go. Mayweather is probably going to, you know, he's probably just going to do a lot of dodging, a lot of, you know, defensive boxing. But then he's going to start turning on. He's going to start going on the aggressive real soon. And that's what ended up happening. And that once you know, that seventh, eighth, ninth round started to hit, I was like, here we go. So I was expecting that to be the result. I'm glad he went out on top. You know, just purely speaking boxing and sports wise, he's one of the best athletes we've ever seen, like JR had said. So yeah, it was relatively an interesting fight, Sidon.
Yeah, and I guess I kind of on this one kind of walked the line on it a little bit, because my neighbor was having a fight party. And I considered going, and then I thought about the company and realized, just with all the hype and everything going into this, I didn't necessarily want to be out and about watching this fight with folks, because, you know, this really did tap into some of the baser instincts of people, will say. And so I ended up, you know, watching a movie with Josie while being blessed with all those illegal Periscope streams on Twitter, and just kind of followed along that way. But the fight went pretty much as I think anyone who really, really, like, thought about this fight or had watched Conor's previous fights figured it would go. Like, Conor had no gas tank. Like, he was gassed in a 5-round UFC fight. So, you know, Floyd basically beat him with strategy by letting him punch himself out early. So even at the beginning of the fight, when people were like, oh my God, Conor's winning, he wasn't really winning. He was basically falling into the trap that Floyd had set for him by letting him punch himself out. And then when he was tired, Floyd beat him up and stopped the fight. So at the end of the day, I'm glad it's over with. It's crazy to me that Floyd Mayweather made more money in that fight than any NFL player or NBA player has made in their career. But it's a wrap. It's over. We've given our recap of that. And we can get into the stuff that really has folks heated today. So, Vikings, 49ers, there was a game. It happened. First team, you know, they call it the dress rehearsal. You know, some say it is, some say it isn't. But the Vikings, they went out there and did not look good at all. So, JR, I know you were really, really fired up about this one, especially after going back through and doing your film review. So, I guess, what are your thoughts of how everything went in that game? And specifically, you know, what are your thoughts on the offensive performance?
I had to take a deep breath before I started, because I don't want to get too emotional when I'm recapping the game. But I thought the effort on both sides of the ball was pathetic, and that's saying it nicely. It just seems like there was no energy out there from anybody. Guys were going through the motions and everything, and I understand that it's the preseason, but whenever you take that field, you should want to, you know, at least have a good showing or get yourself better or get better as a unit. And I didn't see that from either side of the ball. I saw a very conservative play on both sides of the ball and a lot of confusion. And that's really not what you want to see out of either side of the ball, especially considering they have so many new additions and, you know, a new scheme, so to speak, with Shermer, you know, implementing his entire system this year. And it just looked like guys were in flux on both sides of the ball. And it was uncharacteristic of a Zimmer defense to look like that. You know, just on the offensive side of the ball, I thought the offensive line played very poorly. You know, a lot of people were really excited because the projected 5 starters right now were playing their first game together. And they really did not look good at all. Sam Bradford didn't play bad, but he didn't play good. I thought he was middle of the road, but there was a lot of opportunities where he could have, you know, helped them out, but he just didn't take those chances. We talk about Sam having the big arm and the, you know, being pinpoint accurate, but he's just not showing that right now. And
so JR, hold on one sec, just because there we did get a request for a bit of a more detailed breakdown on Sam specifically, and we definitely, obviously, with you being, you know, the quarterback on the pod, want to give you an opportunity to kind of dig into that. But before you go too deep into Sam, want to get Miles and Yinka's just kind of general game reaction, and then we'll give you the floor for your kind of your detailed analysis of the points that were requested by the listener on Sam Bradford. So Miles, could you hit us off with what you thought about the game, having watched it and had a bit of time to think about it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's the preseason, so I mean you can get upset and be a little, I guess, worried, just because of kind of what we're seeing on the right side of the offensive line. Didn't look too hot, especially Mike Remmers. That just, it wasn't pretty. I didn't think some of the play calling, you know, you get worried about on both sides of the ball. I thought defensively, they were getting gashed, whether it was through, you know, through the air, through the, on the ground, or nearest, like, did they not want to play? Are they just ready for the preseason to be over at this point? Because it didn't look good, you know, going against the guys like Brian Hoyer and Carlos Hyde, which we know they've been torched by Carlos Hyde before, this defense, but, you know, kind of hoping that they'd be able to do a little more against this team, because that, in all honesty, that offense for the 49ers isn't anything special. I mean, I know Kyle Shanahan definitely enhances everything, but, you know, Pierre Garçon's their number one receiver. Carlos Hyde's, you know, a top, what, maybe 15 running back when he's healthy. But Brian Hoyer is nothing. He's nothing special. I don't hate him in at all or anything like that. But that team in general, that offense especially, just isn't anything special to write home about. And they made us look like we weren't a top five or top 10 defense easily. So that was just kind of hard to watch on that end. And then offensively, I mean, you have drops. You got, you know, people want to get upset and want to turn into a Teddy bait, but Sam Bradford, again, showing he doesn't want to step up and move around in the pocket the way he should be, you know, and it's always important, especially when you have an offensive line who's, you know, especially I'd say the right tackle position right now is in flux just because that didn't look good. But when he's giving you that opportunity, not giving you the opportunity, but he's bringing his guy outside, you know, past you, you got to be able to move up and step up to kind of avoid some of that pressure. And when you're not willing to do it, it kind of hurts kind of the overall offense. And again, no, the offensive line doesn't do him any justice there either, but there's got to be a little bit of a two-way street there where it can't just be the offensive line's fault the entire time. It's not always the offensive line's fault for the offensive woes. So, you know, guys like Stephon Diggs dropping passes uncharacteristically, so that's not always, you know, not good to see. But, I mean, he's not a guy you worry about either. And then my last take, I guess, you know, my guy Laquon Treadwell, you know, finally got healthy. He's finally healthy. He got, you know, like we saw in the offseason, during the all offseason programs and everything like that, you know, he's lining up in the three wide receiver sets. I think he took two snaps in the slot. But overall, I thought he played well. He looked like he was getting open, even on plays he wasn't being targeted. So just excited to see him kind of get out there and contribute a little bit. That was one of the lone bright spots I saw.
And with Laquon, because this is something I can't actually remember. I know he had the big chunk play against zone coverage on that one long third down. How was he against man coverage? And how many of his yards and receptions did he have kind of beating and getting that separation against man, since that was something that we were concerned with him about pre-draft?
Yeah, I know a couple of the plays, at least, you know, from the angle on the TV, it looks like his release has gotten a lot better since last season. It looks like he's, you know, winning off the line of scrimmage a little bit. He was winning off the line of scrimmage more often than he was last season, you know, or during the preseason and training camp last year. I don't know if Prince wants to jump in there. I know he was at the game, so he might be able to deter a little bit more of that.
Yeah, as far as Laquon goes, I was actually, you know, when we look at bright spots from yesterday's game, Laquon was definitely that player that I saw yesterday. Was the player that I expected to see last year. You know, it does suck that. You know, it does suck that it took, you know, an extra year for him to get there, but that's the player that I wanted to start seeing. He was beating man coverage, I would say, more often than not. I mean, separation has never really been his game, and I think that, you know, we get into these hot takes on specific positions. You know, quarterbacks have to have strong arms, wide receivers, all about separation and stuff, and we lose sight of, you know, it still being a sport. A guy on the other side of the ball, he still has a job that he needs to do. In basketball, you don't always have an optimal amount of room to, you know, get that shot off, but you learn how to play, you know, through having a man in your face or, you know, creating separations. But in regards to Laquan, he was finding the soft spots in the zone. He was, I thought he did a really good job. Not only getting off the line, but also where he was at in the stem and breaks and stuff. So if there was a bright spot in the game, I would definitely say Laquan is one of them. Good, mostly bad in this game. I wasn't visibly upset, but internally I was very upset, just because I think a defensive side, there's so much uncharacteristic things. We saw a lot of miscommunication. We saw a lot of miscommunication between Rhodes and Harrison Smith. We saw it between, you know, linebackers. I saw Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks had a mix up, as far as what they're supposed to do by dropping into coverage. So just a lot of miscommunication, which it worries me, but not as much, just because I know that stuff can get cleaned up, hopefully before the season starts, and I know Zimmer will. But I think more importantly, like we saw last year, we do get to see a glimpse of what this team is like when their defense does not carry the game. And this offense is still not great. And if we, you know, if we talk about how the Vikings were the 23rd ranked offense and we just needed us to be average. Well, we weren't average yesterday. We were below average. And we needed to see, I'd much rather have seen us be, look like we're a top five offense, and then it settles into more realistic where we're only, you know, 14 or 13 or whatever the case is, than to what I saw yesterday where we still look like a below average offense, and then we're still hoping that we're somehow going to, you know, get up into that, you know, that middle of the pack range. Now, it's still possible because we haven't game planned, haven't done a lot of our offensive wrinkles, sure. But what I saw yesterday really worried me on the offensive side of the ball. And it wasn't just the offensive line. You know, they had their, I think more, it was more so individuals who, you know, were messing up, you know, some plays with Remmers and some miscommunications as far as stunts and I think it was Berger. I think he pulled on one play and he didn't quite execute at the level that I wanted him to. But as far as overall, I mean, I am liking what I'm seeing out of this offensive line. You know, yeah, they have their hiccups, but they're still learning how to mesh together. So I think we need to stop with the excuses that the offensive line is so bad, and we might need to start looking at there might be other issues with this offense.
Well, and Prince, too, to kind of go off that, I know a lot of people during the offseason, the big thing was, can we just get the offensive line to, like, below average for best? Not, you know, top two or three in the league, or worst in the league, I mean. So, and that's kind of what this offensive line is at now. So, I mean, at what point is it just become, it's not just the offensive line. Like, you got to be looking at other parameters. It can't just be the offensive line, because that's not what it's going to be this season. It's going to be, there's definitely, if there's going to be failures, it's not just going to be there, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I left the game being upset, because I didn't leave upset, man, like, man, our offensive line is still bad. No, I left the game feeling, man, the play calls were not great. Man, Sam Bradford does not look like a guy that I want to heading into the season. I'm just like, yeah, that's going to be a guy that's going to lead us to 10 to 11 wins. I didn't walk away from the game feeling that way. Like, I walked away from the game like, I don't feel like Sam Bradford's the answer. And I know that's a strong take, and a lot of people are like, hey, it's just preseason and stuff. But I wanted to see more for our dress rehearsal. I went through an 8-8 season in which I was told, hey, Sam Bradford's new to town. He didn't, you know, he only had 8 days. Well, now he had an entire offseason to look a little bit better. And he did it. You know, did he look, am I hitting the massive panic button that he's worst quarterback ever? No. My take is purely about Sam Bradford. And I feel like I can be objective in looking at him and saying, like, what I saw yesterday I was not impressed with.
So. Well, that is a fantastic segue, because as I hinted to earlier, we did get a request for a more detailed breakdown of kind of what went on yesterday, just from the execution at the quarterback position. Obviously, there was a very intense debate earlier today about, you know, one of the clips JR posted. Could Sam step up? Was there enough time, space, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? But, yeah, JR, if you could just kind of walk us through what you saw when you went back and looked at the tape, and specifically, I guess, the things that people are interested in and in kind of understanding is, you know, pocket presence, reading coverage, you know, what you were seeing on third downs from Sam, and, you know, what it is about his performance that, that really had you, I guess, as upset as you were when you went back and looked at the tape again.
So, you know, just going back and looking at it, it seemed worse at first when you watch it on live TV, but it wasn't as bad as I really made it seem like it was, or fans made it seem like it was. Once you go back and look at it, there was a couple opportunities there to where he threw some nice throws. The digs drop, both of the digs drops, you know, that might have led to points or, yeah, at least a first down. But, you know, just on the subject of Sam's pocket presence, you know, it's a trait that you have to have, in my opinion. Like, if you don't have pocket presence in the NFL, you will not last. That's just my opinion. You won't be successful. And, you know, you see guys with great pocket presence, like Andrew Luck is a guy that has great pocket presence. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, guys along those lines really had outstanding pocket presence. The biggest thing that pocket presence helps you with is it buys you time within the pocket, because we know breakdowns happen within the pocket all the time. It happens around the NFL, but if a quarterback is creative and can naturally navigate his way through the pocket while still keeping his eyes down the field, it buys some time, especially with NFL routes being all based on timing. And sometimes they take more time than, you know, usual. So quarterbacks have to sit back there and buy time for themselves sometimes. And, you know, Sam is just not able to do that. So what he does at the top of his drop, or meaning that once he gets or completes all the steps in his initial drop, he just stands there instead of climbing the pocket or, you know, shifting one way or another based on how, you know, the defensive linemen are trying to attack him. And it's just, it's a natural trait that it can't be coached. You see all these coaches running around with broomsticks in their arms and, you know, chasing these quarterbacks doing various pocket drills, but it's something that you really can't coach, because it's just a natural feel that you have to have for something within the pocket. And we're not seeing that from Sam Bradford. The clip I posted today was, you know, it was a simple five-step drop and they had man coverage down the field. So with man coverage, it takes a little bit longer to develop, because guys have to gain separation, and sometimes they don't. You have to take a risk. But if Sam was able to, you know, hit that fifth step on his drop and climb up within the pocket, you know, maybe he could have took off and ran if nobody was open, or if somebody did come open, he could come up and hit him. And especially with those ends coming up the field as hard as they were, he can help the tackles out, the offensive tackles out, by just climbing up in the pocket. Because, you know, with those speed rushers, you can climb the pocket and it helps those tackles, you know, just run them around, as opposed to, you know, Sam staying at the top of his drop and them just running the hoop and just having the easy pathway to him.
And then in terms of, because you're saying, you know, buy a little bit more time, I guess, was there anything that you saw? Because I know that one of the things that really got people fired up is, you know, Sam did kind of revert to what seemed to be the, you know, the check down, the safe. I think there was a point in the game where Sam Bradford's, you know, completion percentage was 76.4%, but his yards per attempt was under 5. I guess, did you see anything or any opportunities where, I guess, based on what the coverage was doing, there were opportunities to maybe, you know, take a shot down the field, or there were other times where maybe you were looking at it and it seemed like he might have been locked into his first read or made his mind up before the snap where he was going with the football?
Yeah, there was ample opportunities to where, you know, he could have took more shots down the field. And, you know, from time to time he did. I keep bringing up the two digs drops. Those could have helped him. I believe one of those was a third down situation to where they could have got the first down. So, you know, he was taking some intermediate risk from time to time, but, you know, Diggs just wasn't helping him out in those certain situations. But there was other times where Diggs could have helped him out, or he could have helped Diggs out. I put up a GIF earlier today where he just has to see the safety rotation. He just wasn't seeing the coverage cleanly. It was a 3rd-and-9 situation in the second quarter where they were running a crossing route across the field. And it was a 2-yard crossing route where he had Laquon Treadwell on the outside man-to-man where the safety vacated. So just situations like that where Sam is just not seeing the field or the coverage cleanly. And it goes back to, if you never played quarterback before, you really won't understand it. So whenever a quarterback dropped back to pass, there's a mental clock in your head, and it usually lasts about 4 seconds. What you're seeing right now with Sam is that clock is extremely fast because he's kind of scarred by what he went through last year with the offensive line, and he's not trusting his mental clock. So his mental clock, instead of being 4 seconds, it's about 2 seconds now. And he's not seeing the field cleanly because that mental clock is just speeding up so fast. So he feels like he's feeling, you know, ghost pressure. That's a better word for it. Or he's just feeling guys around him that's not really there. And he's just getting the ball out as fast as he can because that mental clock is so sped up because of the lack of trust in the offensive line.
Okay. And Miles, we'll start with you, I guess. Did JR basically cover anything, or was there anything else or any other points you wanted to make from a Bradford perspective in terms of what you saw in the game, in terms of, you know, that made you nervous going into the season, or are you kind of more on the side of, you know, it's just preseason, they'll figure it out over the next couple of weeks?
I definitely think there's a combination of both. I think, you know, on some plays, a guy like the quarterback definitely is going to, you know, see a situation where he might not, you know, potentially fall down or take an easy sack and, you know, make more of it. Because, you know, it's the preseason, but, you know, since it's the preseason, they, you know, he might not something he might do in the regular season. I definitely think there is some of that going on. Overall, though, I do think it's, I don't know if it's Sam as much as it might be Pat Shurmur at this point. You know, again, it's still the preseason, so maybe some of that stuff's still pretty vanilla, but this, again, like you know, we talked about, it's supposed to be the dress rehearsal, so this should be the, what is it, you know, the first look that we should really get into what the first regular season game should be in terms of some of the plays, some of the formations, you know, the designs and the play calls. And so far it didn't look good. And I know it can always depend on, you know, the defense you're facing. Sometimes they're prepared well for, you know, what you got going on. But overall, I think it was more of the offensive scheme that worried me more than Sam Bradford personally. But
well, that is a fantastic segue, because I know that Prince brought up, you know, one of the things that he was actually nervous about or concerned with watching the game wasn't just so much about how the players played, but it was also how Shurmur called the game. And so that was really the next thing I wanted to get y'all's takes on, is that obviously you guys know I've had my concerns about Shurmur since we brought him in. He's never really been the leader or the play caller for a top tier offense. And, you know, a lot of what we saw or we've seen through this preseason and what we saw last year wasn't really much that would make you kind of excited or, you know, make you feel like we have, you know, a guy who's going to put us in a great position to succeed. Like, you watched Kyle Shanahan and the way that he was calling plays and the way that it was confusing coverages or getting guys wide open and things like that. And you just didn't see that sort of thing with any of what Shurmur was doing through last season or even in any of these preseason games. So I guess Yinka, we'll start with you because, you know, you brought it up previously and you're kind of next up here. I guess from, you know, the game when you were watching live, I guess, what were your thoughts on the game Shurmur called and the type of offense you've seen now, having gone to training camp, watched these first three games, and then obviously watching this third one live from the stadium?
As far as, I mean, we could talk about Kyle Shanahan and what he did. I saw him put his wide receivers in situations where it didn't really seem like the wide receivers were having to work really that hard. You know, yeah, they would have to get off the line pretty cleanly and get the, you know, depth of the route and whatnot. But it really just felt like the Vikings defense were just getting outsmarted with a lot of rub type of combinations, like wide receivers, like natural picks that were happening, where you didn't see that in Shurmur's offense. Shurmur's offense required Laquon Treadwell, who struggles with, you know, separation, to get separation. Versus, you know, maybe, you know, putting him in a situation where, you know, maybe Diggs pulls a little bit of coverage away from Laquon and gives him a little bit more space to operate. I didn't see enough of that where I have a lot of confidence in. The only thing that basically yesterday proved was that our backups are better than San Francisco and probably a lot of the league. You know, a play that comes to mind was one of the last game when we're going for a 2-point conversion. Taylor Heinicke, you know, he takes a snap, and then I believe there were like a shallow cross or something that he had going, and Heinicke had nowhere to go with the football. I mean, you could see that from the vantage point I had, and obviously you could see that on TV where he had nowhere to go with the football. And you know, thankfully he uses athleticism to get into the end zone, but I'm looking at that in regular season type situation or even playoff situation. The Vikings are, you know, needing to score a touchdown, and that's the play call that I see. I do like that the running game has evolved, but I think that has less to do with the play calls, and I think that has more to do with the talent and how it has made it a little bit easier for our offensive line to win and to create positive yardage for our running backs. But concern me what I'm seeing as far as play calls, which is why I'm not as critical on Sam Bradford. Still, it is still an area of concern.
And JR, what about you, man? You obviously, you know, you watched it live, you watched it again. What are your thoughts on what you've seen from Sherman now over, you know, the second half of last season, and then what you've seen thus far? Obviously, it's preseason, it's vanilla, you know all that. But what are your thoughts on kind of what you've seen, not just about the plays he's called, but kind of how he's called them in the flow of the game? And what are your thoughts on what that's going to mean for us going into the season?
I'm not happy. You know, I wasn't a big fan of Shermer before. I'm still going to give him a chance this season to prove himself. But right now, he got a short leash with me right now. But like I said, I'm going to give him a chance this season. Maybe he's keeping it vanilla on purpose just because he's just not incorporating his offense. And this is his first season or full season actually calling plays. But maybe he's just hiding the good stuff for the season. So he's got an incomplete grade for me right now, and I'm just going to use this season to judge him.
Okay, Miles, how about you, man? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I kind of want to – again, I think this is an opportunity, a really big opportunity, a really big season for a guy like Pat Shurmur. This is by far the best offense he's had to work with in terms of talent, whether it's, you know, quarterback, running back, receivers, and even, you know, I know your favorite top five tight end, Kyle Rudolph, but, you know, he has the weapons. He's got the opportunity to kind of get creative and do a lot of different things with his offense. It's just about whether he'll do it or not. I mean, again, this is the best offense he's ever worked with in terms of from what I've seen as him as an offensive coordinator. So, get creative, do something new. Don't be so predictable. And, you know, I'm not going to write him off completely yet, but like JR said, it's kind of frustrating, and we kind of want to, you know, the way this offense has been playing as of late anyways, we need to see a lot more from our offensive coordinator and kind of see him get this thing righted, get this thing going in the right direction.
Yep, you guys are couching your takes, being diplomatic. I will not be so. I have very little faith in Pat Shurmur. Just based on the evidence that we have of his career thus far, he turns all of his quarterbacks into super conservative check down artists. Last year's Viking offense, which all of us know was not a very good offense, was the best offense that Pat Shurmur has coordinated in his career as a play caller. Yeah, I honestly, as much as we talk about, you know, Sam, Teddy, and all these other things, Pat Shurmur is probably the person that I'm most concerned about with the offense. And really my hope for us is that with this new zone running scheme, as much as it is a passing league and all those things, my hope is that, you know, we can get Dalvin in there and you know, he can be that superstar player that we know him to be, and that we don't have to rely so much on the creativity of Pat Shurmur or the schemes or the systems that he's coming up with to beat or outsmart the other teams, that, you know, talent takes over and can kind of drag the offense with it. But with that, I kind of wanted to also transition into a conversation about, you know, something we've been arguing a little bit about offline. But Prince wrote an article talking about, you know, the importance of the running game. And I think to quote it, and Prince, you can correct me if I do this wrong, but using the running game to, quote unquote, set up the passing game. And so I'll let you, I guess, break down, you know, the premise of your article, and then we can get into it, because obviously I have some strong opinions on the opposite side of this conversation.
Yeah. So obviously, for a few years, I've actually been looking at a lot of efficiency stats when it comes to running backs and, you know, passing stats and stuff. And I guess I was getting a little frustrated that, you know, every efficiency stat that I was finding was just like, I know that the run game helps, but I mean, based on these efficiency stats, it's just like, I just don't see any reason why a team would focus on improving a run game if every efficiency stat shows like, hey, it doesn't help out that much. And, you know, with it becoming a passing league, why doesn't teams just optimize their passing potential? But then I found, thanks to Arif Hassan, I had to give him a shout out because he got mad at me that I didn't give him a shout out. But he kind of pointed me to look at it in a different way. And I found an article that I really loved. It was kind of, it talked about success rates. So the premise behind success rates when it comes to really anything, but more specifically running game, is it's basically how you look at running game. So if you get 40% of your yards for the first down, it's considered to be a success. Half the amount of distance, the amount of yards to go, then that's also considered a success on second down. And then third down, obviously, getting the necessary yards. And that was actually a really unique way to look at it, because I had only ever been looking at it, well, you know, four yards, you know, that's an efficient run game. But I obviously know that that's not, it's not feasible every single play and stuff. So I've now kind of shifted the way that I look at not just running game, but football in general. And now I kind of want to start breaking it down, because before, when I was just looking at efficiency stats, good run game, efficient run game was only kind of correlated by 0.15% of, you know, if you have a good run game, how strongly correlated it is with winning. But when you look at it from a success standpoint, or, you know, the success rate standpoint, it's actually a lot higher correlated with winning, at about 0.4, which is, it's big enough of a difference where it shows that, yeah, running game definitely helps you win. And as far as even highly correlated with how it affects the passing game, it goes from 10% to all the way to, I think, 0.4 or 0.44, something like that. Percent.
And see, that's where I wanted to jump in, because I think that's where, when we were kind of talking about it in the group message, we were talking past each other a little bit, in that, you know, in that Brian Burke article, success rate basically, so I mean, if your run game is effective and you're picking up chunks of yardage, it correlates very strongly with success rate in the passing game, which is intuitive. If your running game is putting you in favorable down and distances, then it's easier for your passing game to convert those favorable downs and distances. So from an offensive perspective, your offense will likely be better if you have a successful run game. And so that's the point that we agree on. The part of it where we were talking back and forth, or talking past each other, is the fact that your offense getting better because your running game is better doesn't necessarily mean that your passing attack becomes more efficient or more explosive. You're just being put in positions where your passing attack has to do less to continue to extend drives, which is why the passing attack success rate is higher. So we can see, even this preseason, you know, Dalvin Cook, the run game looks better, but Sam Bradford's performance thus far in the preseason looks very much like Sam Bradford's performance last year.
Yeah, and I understood where you were getting at with that. And my point with that was, it at the end of the day, even with the success of the run game on its effects, I mean, there are still aspects of everything that, you know, are, you know, confounding. This is still, you know, passing attacks still is reliant on Sam Bradford being a good passer and making the right decisions. You know, if the run game gets them to third and two or third and three, it's still reliant on Sam Bradford being able to complete a pass for 2 or 3 yards. So can you necessarily say that the run game is going to directly affect Sam Bradford's individual performance? No, because the only person who can really affect Sam Bradford's individual performance is Sam Bradford. But can the run game and success rate put Bradford in more favorable situations for him to succeed? Yes, and I think that's where we agree on, and that's how I'm going to start looking at how it affects it, because when we look at 2015, which is what I went to in my article, Adrian Peterson wasn't successful so often that he put Teddy Bridgewater in so many unfavorable situations where it was hard for Teddy to succeed. And even despite that, he still found enough situations where Teddy was succeeding on third downs because of how poor Adrian Peterson was. Now, what I'm looking at as far as this year is, can Dalvin Cook be successful enough with this new scheme to put Bradford in situations that he already does well? He does well on first down. He does well on, you know, third and short. He doesn't do well on third and long. So I feel like the success rate with that is going to help Sam Bradford, because he doesn't do well in third and long situations, which a back like Adrian Peterson would definitely be detrimental to Sam Bradford. But again, back like Dalvin Cook, who we're hoping will be a lot more successful than AP was, will put Bradford in those favorable situations to succeed himself.
So JR is obviously our resident QB on the pod. It's one of those things that's talked about a lot, like the running game and your run to set up the pass, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. From your perspective as someone who's actually played the position, I guess help us walk through it from how you look at it in terms of, you know, that relationship. Does having a great run game make you or make a quarterback or change how a quarterback thinks about, you know, what they're going back? Because obviously from my perspective, when I looked at it from, you know, just the numbers, there is very little statistical relationship between, you know, how efficiently a quarterback plays and how efficient their run game is. But is it different from a player's perspective?
I think, you know, the run actually helping the pass is one of the biggest misconceptions in all of football. Everyone talks about the play action game and, you know, the run setting up the pass and all these fakes, nice play fakes and on the play action is helping the pass game. But I think that's a huge misconception. I think a run game really helps a quarterback situationally more than anything, especially like, let's say they're in a late game situation and, you know, they have this stud running back in the backfield. Let's say Le'Veon Bell, for example, and Big Ben is lined up in front of him and, you know, he's doing all these play action fakes to him and all this other sorts. I think that helps them there because they have to respect him in that situation because they don't know if he's getting the ball or not, just for how versatile he is. So I think it's more of a situational thing when a running game is helping a quarterback, not the overall attack and the overall offense. I think that's a huge misconception, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense from where I am. But I also, from the perspective that Prince is looking at it, where you're looking at it more from the team, then I think we're all on the same page that having an improved running game can put your team into a better position. And if your team is in better positions, then your offense should be more successful. And if your offense is more successful, ideally you score more points, take some of the pressure off the defense. So from a team perspective, I'm 100% with you. I just don't think that Dalvin is going to have an appreciable effect on Sam and Sam's, I guess, statistics. As Prince, I guess, is that a fair take for me, or is that something that that you have some pushback on?
I don't think it's an unfair take, but I think that would speak to more to. I think that more speaks to, again, individuals. I think it speaks to Pat Shurmur, and I think it also speaks to Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford has a lot of physical tools that honestly a guy, a back like Dalvin Cook should be able to optimize it. You know, when you look at what Zeke was able to do last year with Dak Prescott, and you were able to look with Thomas Rawls, helped an already efficient Russell Wilson. I think that's where you'll start seeing, you know, guys who were maybe already good play even greater. And then I think that's why you feel as if he's not going to prove that well, because Sam Bradford hasn't shown us to be great yet. Not to say that he can't, but he hasn't shown us to be great yet. And this is the best situation he's been in. You know, he's been good at times, but he hasn't been great. So you know, the effects might still be minimal with Dalvin Cook because, again, it's still an individual thing. Sam Bradford has to perform at a higher level. Pat Shurmur has to schematically work things out to put Bradford in a more favorable situation to succeed based on his skill set. I don't think Bradford is limited. I think he's one of the least limited quarterbacks in the league with what he's able to do down the field, his quick release, all that stuff. But as far as his play goes, you know, he tends to be not take those risks more often than not. And I know there's like that, you know, we talked about earlier about how, you know, Diggs didn't help him out and sometimes the receivers don't help him out. But, you know, if we were to take away every wide receiver drop from every quarterback would still be, you know, again, we could standardize that across quarterbacks. And Sam Bradford, I think Arif is the one that said it, would still have a pretty below average average depth of the target as well as, you know, yards per attempt. So we can dispel that, you know, Diggs's drop led to Bradford being this. No, Bradford needs to perform. He needs to step up his game and elevate his game and how he's playing to be able to, you know, have that respect and have Dalvin Cook have a, in my opinion, a greater effect on his success.
Perfect. I think that that pretty well sums up, I guess, the things that we were talking about offline that we wanted to talk about on here. And our boy Brian Hines pretty much summed it up, because I know that we've been talking a lot about, you know, Sam Bradford on this episode. We don't hate Sam Bradford. Nobody hates Sam Bradford. We are fans of a team, and we want the quarterback that we have in here, the previously number one overall draft pick, the guy who has the great arm, can make all the throws, number one deep accuracy in the league. We just want him to perform better. And I think that it's fair. And, you know, this shield that folks seem to be hiding behind now, that anytime anyone offers a, you know, fact-based football critique of Sam Bradford, that, oh, you must hate him, or, oh, you must want Teddy, or, oh, all these other things, it's silly. It's sports, it's football, we should be able to talk about it. And I think pretty much everybody on this podcast has advocated us drafting a number one, a quarterback early in the next draft, regardless of who's here. So ultimately, we're Minnesota Vikings fans. And to date, Sam Bradford's career is one that is worthy of skepticism. He's super talented. We want him to pull it all together. At this point, I worry more about Pat Shurmur allowing him to really pull it all together and thrive. I think that, you know, with a coordinator, maybe like a Josh McDaniels or something like that, Sam would probably have been better to date. But it is what it is. We are where we are. But that is one of the things that is incredibly annoying. And I just wanted to get that off my chest, is that, you know, if someone goes in, and JR is kind of the one who touched off this firestorm today, he puts the time in and makes a football critique of a player. Stop with the nonsense talking about, oh, you hate that guy, because you're just showing yourself to be someone who in that moment is being ignorant. Like, come up with an argument to beat the one that's made versus just going to, you know, name calling and calling people haters and foolish nonsense like that. So sorry for going on this little bit of a rant, because that's supposed to be Yinka's thing on this podcast. But, you know, it was there. I just read the tweet and it it got me going. So with that, Yinka, you obviously dropped your article today. If you haven't already, go read it. We'll put it in the show notes. What else you got going on for us? Because, man, did you go to training camp? I feel like you went to training camp.
Oh, no. I didn't go to
– did you talk to anyone when you were at training camp?
No, I didn't go to training camp at all. You're okay, thinking, about like, some, when, thinking about somebody else.
When you were at training camp, I really thought you went to training camp. But anywho, I like, you know, what you got going on? What you got upcoming for us, man?
Every time I start – every time I, like, get back into it, I get pulled away by something. I got pulled away from this the success rate article. And actually, it's gonna start – it's going to change the way that I look at the season, and I probably will start charting it up a little bit more on our success rate, Vikings passing, running, you know, maybe even some special teams things this season. But I will get done with the Teddy article, but this one was just like, it was too good because we talk about it all the time for me to not get on the website. So that's coming next.
All right, JR, what's going on with you, man? see that the inspiration hit you probably early in the morning, and you broke us off with a nice little mock draft for next year. What else you got in the hopper for us? What else can we expect for you upcoming?
I'm thinking about doing a preview of Thursday's game. I haven't really decided yet.
Oh my goodness.
If I do want to do it, just because it's going to be so many, guys fighting for the 53-man roster out there, and a lot of guys that we never heard of before. But I haven't decided yet. But, I will let you know on Twitter if I do end up doing one. But, nothing else is on tap right now, though.
Full film breakdown of Mitch Leidner upcoming from JR, the quarterback who will likely play the most minutes in the upcoming game.
Yeah, I haven't turned off a Vikings game in a very long time. But if I have to watch him and he performs poorly, it's really going to test my patience.
I'm so excited for you to watch Mitch Leidner, JR. I'm going to just be getting – I can't watch the game, obviously. I'll be at my younger brother's game. But I will be actively searching Twitter to see your live reactions to – former future first round pick, Mitch Leidner.
And I'm actually not going to get to watch this game. I'm actually going to be at the Falcons game in Atlanta for this one. So, yeah, we'll be relying on you for all of our insight into how the second, third, and fourth and guys we brought in off the street because we don't want somebody else to get hurt. Guys right. Perform in this game. So
Jason's going to be enjoying, the food at the Falcons game. You can get 10 burgers for $20.
Got to do it. You get to get in there on a Thursday and actually enjoy the Chick-fil-A they put in there,
Yeah.
So I guess No. Before we go, the most important question that I had for JR, how many episodes into Game of Thrones are you now, man?
I'm still struggling right now. I'm only on episode 3 of season 1. I started off strong. They pushed my guy Bran out the window, and I was just like, oh, I gotta keep going. But I'm just now getting introduced to Littlefinger, and it's just something about this guy that just doesn't seem right.
Well, based on all that's gone on in recent episodes, you're an excellent judge of character, but I will say I'm gonna need you to get on your grind, man. Grind the tape, put in the work. And we need you to get this season finished, man.
I'll be caught up by Christmas time.
No, that's not good enough, man.
I'm so dead at they push my man Brandon out the window. I'm so dead at that. It's exciting. I think Vikings Twitter, JR, you watch so much film that I think it's something exciting that Vikings Twitter gets to watch you react to all of it. So we all get to vicariously relive all the moments all over again.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
But you are enjoying the show, say that at least.
Oh yeah, I love it. I just don't have a lot of time to binge watch a whole 7 seasons, but I'll get there eventually. By the time they have season 8, if they do, I'll be ready.
They will. It's confirmed.
I'll be ready.
All I'm saying now is that because JR selfishly started watching Game of Thrones, now we can't end the show with all of our random theories about what's going to happen, in these future episodes, because now we're actually giving JR spoilers. Before, JR just put us on mute and walked off. Now, he might actually be paying attention. We don't want to mess it up for him.
Right.
All right. Well, I think we covered everything. All y'all tweet JR, make sure that he, stays committed to his Game of Thrones grind so he gets caught up. You have a little bit of time, so we need you to get this going. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. And we'll be back soon. Y'all have a good one.